That's Harold Mayburn on piano, leading off with Rakin' and Scrapin', the title track of his 1969 album. And on that tune, we have Blue Mitchell on trumpet, George Coleman on tenor sax, Bill Lee on bass, and Hugh Walter on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And we start off the program with a... a shield story. To blunt vigorous student and community protest against Hillary Clinton at Medgar Evers College's 45th commencement ceremony tomorrow, Merle Evers Williams, the widow of the assassinated civil rights leader after whom the college is named, will introduce her dear friend, who is to deliver the commencement address and receive an honorary doctorate. That dear friend is Hillary Clinton, and for weeks now, more than weeks now, the student body and people in the community have been protesting her appearance at the college and specifically at the commencement, the 45th commencement, of Medgar Evers students. So our friend is on the air as well with us. That's Daoud Andre, who is an organizer with the group Como Coda, a group of a Haitian group particularly interested in the investigation of Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton as it relates to what the Clintons did in Haiti. Daoud, great to have you with us today.
Greetings, Utrice, and greetings to your audience as well. Before
Thank you.
We move on, Utrice, I have to send you greetings from a dear friend of mine. His name is Jacob Pierre-Louis. He used to live in New York, used to listen to you religiously at BAI, and now he's back living in Haiti. And every time we talk, he wants to know how is Utrice's health doing, you know? So from
Thank
the
you.
Mountains of Benin, he
Thank
says,
you.
Please take good care of yourself.
Thank you so much, and thank him, too, for such good and kind thoughts. Well,
yes.
Tomorrow is D-Day, Daoud. How's it looking?
Well, we will be there. We will be outside and inside, Utrice, protesting. There's a significant number of students who have tried on their end to protest from within the school while we were outside. And we understand that as well as what we are preparing in terms of protest, the students themselves, they are preparing. As you said in the beginning, the pushback, the buffer that the school thinks can blunt our protest, our legitimate protest, is bringing Mrs. Merle Evers Williams to introduce her longtime friend. Such a longtime
good buddy
friend.
And pal.
Such a longtime friend, you know, that in 2013, a mere 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton was referring to Medgar Evers as Medgar Evans. So I don't know when that friendship started, Utrice. But the fact is, the college community, and we've leafleted with UAM family all over Brooklyn and Manhattan, other communities that we thought needed to be touched with this information. People understand, everyone understands that this individual who called our black youth super predators who must be brought to heel cannot be the person that's brought to them as the role model. This is the key fact in this, aside from everything we know she and her family have done in Libya, in Haiti, you know, with coups in Honduras, all of this. But this cannot be the individual that the school presents as a role model for our children.
I think it is such a shoddy thing to do. And you see the hands of the Clintons here. I'm not so sure whether this was the thought of the president of the college. But you see that this whole thing is being organized to legitimize Hillary Clinton. And it is always to the black community that the Clintons look for political salvation. And as she attempts to mount a resurrection, she is all the more interested in, you know, surrounding herself and finding herself in the black community. So this was especially a really low move. And although I'm sure Merle Evers Williams herself would see the legitimacy of it, I don't know what persuaded her, unless she didn't know. I don't know what would persuade her to overlook the dissonance that that Hillary Clinton engenders in the community, and especially with her late husband's name in the middle of it all, that she would have consented to appear. And it's not just her, it's her daughter and even her grandchildren. They have the grandchildren in the mix. Introducing Hillary Clinton. She is among her black family. Isn't that great?
So, you know, and this is the role that, you know, we've denounced this a lot, that whenever the Clintons, they feel that they're in trouble, as you said, they go to the black community. We know Jesse Jackson with Monica Lewinsky, you know, David Dinkins, you know, bringing him to Harlem in an office people say he barely uses, but he keeps for the political, the same thing here, while driving out, you know, gentrifying 125th Street. But, you know, our people, they get it. You know, they get it. And the students, they get it. And I think that this, their buffer, what they believe is their, you know, the buffer that they cannot lose, you know, the black community who cannot go anywhere else but stay with them. I think that this is going to be their downfall eventually, because our people, they do understand. I want to let family who want to join us tomorrow to know that the graduation is not happening at Medgar Evers College. It's happening at the Barclays Center that is on Atlantic Avenue and Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn. Just about every train goes to Atlantic Avenue. You have the B, the Q, the D, the N, the R, and number 2, 3, 4, 5 get off at Atlantic Avenue in Berkeley, and buses, 11 buses go to the Barclays Center, bus 25, 26, 38, 41, 45, 52, 63, 65, 67, 69, B103. The graduation is supposed to happen at 9 a.m., but the school wants the graduating students to be there at 7 a.m. So this is when we are going to be there at 7 a.m., you know? And media, parents, they're being asked to come at 8. We want to be there to have a strong presence, giving out flyers in front of the school before, you know, these people are going in. So we urge family to join us. And one thing I want to say, Utrice, is to thank you. And, you know, our people, they say, you know, you can't thank someone when they're doing their work. But
exactly.
I have to thank you.
I'm doing my job.
We have to thank you because, you know, your program, you connected us, especially with the United African Movement. You know, we've always worked together, gone to their events, but in terms of organizational collaboration, it came through this event. And this family, UAM family, they have been all over Brooklyn with us, say, the left, quote-unquote, left forum, you know, that happened in at John Jay College this weekend. You know, we were all over the place giving out thousands of flyers to let people know that opposition to Trump cannot mean, you know, embracing the racist, the corrupt Clintons. And what we always tell them, you know, our quote-unquote leftist friends is, so long as they stand, they persist in standing with fake feminists, fake, you know, progressive, fake everything, you know, Clinton, Hillary Clinton, we cannot be allies. We cannot be allies, because they have to understand that the women that Hillary Clinton has, you know, in these sweatshops in Haiti, they are women just like them, you know? And so we cannot, we hope they understand the message.
I think they increasingly are, and it is important. It's so great that the people in the community are standing up and reminding the larger community that it is not about ceremonial cliches where somebody, you know, Hillary Clinton, oh my God, isn't that great that she dares? She actually makes time for us in her busy schedule to come and honor us with her presence. No, she is using the community and abusing the community. I was just reading this morning that while she was the first lady of Arkansas, she was using black prison labor in her house. Now, this is the kind of person who really ought to be exposed. And I'm glad that the people in the community and certainly the students are standing up. And afterwards, there's work still to do, even more work to do, because you do have to consider how this whole thing happened, who arranged it and why. And that, you know, is important as well. But you guys have been on the case for a long time, still asking questions about where those billions of dollars went that were supposed to help Haiti rebuild after the earthquake, and you're still on the case. Thanks, Daoud, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
And giving us this update. I encourage everybody who's able to go there tomorrow to go there tomorrow. Well, as we know, tomorrow is a big day in Congress. We talked about that yesterday. Former FBI Director James Comey, who was fired on May 9th by President Donald Trump, appears before the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee tomorrow, a day after the president would have announced Comey's replacement. Interesting how people use timing, you know. Comey will command rapt attention as he testifies, no doubt, but it's not so much the answers. It's will he be will the proper questions and the right questions be posed to him? One person who knows this scenario very well is with us. You know him here. He's been with us so many times unraveling the Clinton Foundation and the insiders who have protected her for a long time. That person is Charles Ortel. Hi, Charles. Good to have you with us.
Hi, it's Reese. Great to be back on.
Thank you. Well, you must be tired getting the call saying, I know you know the answers here on this one. And the answer, the question is, what questions won't James Comey be asked tomorrow that are extremely important to be asked?
Well, it's an excellent lead-in. And if you'll indulge me, I'm going to take a few minutes here. If you go back through history, back to the Clinton years, particularly in the 1996 election, the big issue in the 1996 election, and there were multiple investigations afterwards, was what was called Chinagate, whether or not China was providing illegal funding through conduits to the Clinton campaign and to Democrats. And, you know, that was quite a lot of federal tax money was spent looking at these investigations, which in the end did result in some prosecutions, but were not as, significant as they may have been back in this time period. So the question of whether China and Chinese agents have been meddling in our election process goes way back, and there's a long trail involving the Clintons going all the way back to Arkansas in the 1980s. So one thing I've learned, and again, I'm not a political expert, I'm an investment type, but I'm okay with numbers and I know a little bit about history, and something of what I read about politics, the Clintons, if you watch them, are masters and mistresses of what is called gaslighting, accusing the other side of a crime that they're actually committing. So when we think about what's happened since 1996 forward, the internet and technology have only become more and more powerful. And the Chinese, of course, have, you know, tremendous technological wealth, and expertise, and now they have wealth, and they have a determined military, and they have long been accused, as we have been in this country and other countries have been accused, of hacking rivals and enemies around the world. So do we really believe over time, since 1996, that Chinese, and specifically the Chinese military, has become less proficient in hacking and less proficient, perhaps, at sending vast sums of money over the Internet in small bites to places like the Clinton charities that are not regulated and not accounted for properly? I, for one, am somebody who believes that it's highly, highly likely that that route has been used not simply to support the Clintons, perhaps to support the Obama candidates, perhaps to support Republicans. And so with that as context, one thing I didn't realize until a good friend of mine, Michael Smith, over in Australia, sent me a video, Utrecht, I think I sent it to you this morning, which apparently goes into the degree to which the Chinese may have been meddling in and are meddling in the Australian electoral picture. Now, why is that relevant? Because in 2015, a woman named Sherry Wong, I think it is, or Sherry Yang, was indicted or arrested and indicted for possibly illegally corrupting a man who now is dead, Mr. Ash, who I think is in the video, they say he was president of the UN General Assembly. Now, this happened in 2015. At a time when Mr. Comey was still head of the FBI. So, you know, when we trace Mr. Comey's long history, and I hope that he's an honorable man, I truly do, but when we trace his long history all the way back in politics, you know, operating, you know, for Bush, operating for, basically for the Democrats as well, it is not, to me, a positive sign that he has quotes, bipartisan service, because to me that when I hear bipartisan, I think uniparty. I think both parties, elements in both parties that like cronyism, that benefit from cronyism, are very happy to affect a bipartisan veneer to blunt scandals that implicate both parties. So I don't like what I see here. I don't like Mueller and his long history. I mean, after all, Mr. Mueller, you know, was head of the FBI at a time when the FBI and Comey were investigating the Clinton Foundation back in the 2001 to 2005 period. As we said before, Utrecht, you know, just from the public information and a brief review of applicable laws, a first-year law student working, you know, diligently could, in a matter of months, cobble together out of the public evidence, publicly available evidence, enough to put the trustees of the Clinton Foundation away forever. So why didn't that happen when Mueller was head of the FBI and Comey was in there at first as U.S. Attorney General and then as Deputy AG? I don't like Comey's involvement with HSBC. I don't like his involvement with Lockheed. I don't like his, the fact that he came back in as head of the FBI and was over top of the FBI when the Russians came in and said, among other things, hey, you ought to take a look at these Tsarnaev brothers. And our FBI, you know, was so great that they couldn't figure out that these guys were a threat, and look what happened. You know, so I think
these
there
are
a
the
lot
brothers
of questions here.
Who were implicated in the bombing, terrorist-style bombing in Boston, Massachusetts.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't like all that. I also don't like what I'm learning today about from my good friend. I have to give a shout-out to Sidney Powell, who was in the Department of Justice. She is a fierce woman, wonderful person, took on, she wrote a great book called License to Lie, all about the degree to which the government oversteps its bounds. You know, there's a cabal in government that will go after you when it suits them. And her book is a page-turner. And sadly, her books appears to suggest that this new fellow, Mr. Ray, who I, when I first read about it, was optimistic. If you believe Sidney Powell, which I do, you know, this Mueller Mr. Mueller has hired a man last name Weissman, who figures as a central, frankly, evil character in the License to Lie book. He way overstepped his bounds on Enron. Now, I'm not somebody who would defend what happened at Enron. I think, you know, the Enron fraud is not yet fully told. But, you know, it's one thing. I mean, it's bad enough to commit fraud, but I don't think our Justice Department should break the rules that exist in, you know, going after people suspected of crimes. And that appears to be what has happened under with the Enron Task Force, according to Sidney Powell's telling of the story, in which Weissman was centrally involved, in which this guy Ray, now apparently nominated to be FBI director, was a key player. So there's a lot of questions here, and to me what it looks like is that the Uniparty is trying to cover its tracks. And, you know, we the people deserve more than that. We the people who are out there every day trying to make a living, working hard to keep our jobs, working hard to save to the extent that's possible and invest in anything that looks sensible. And the last thing we need, you know, having had this wave election, is the Uniparty, you know, getting together and stopping the kinds of real and sensible reforms that can help our inner cities, help our workers, help those in the private sectors, help us keep this country safe, and help us expose the massive corruption that I think has been going on in this country well over 20 years under both Republican and Democratic administrations across the country in every state in many of the big cities. We need to get into this. And those of us who play by the rules need to root out the people who haven't been playing by the rules, get restitution for sums that have been diverted and stolen, and put on notice the government sector, which is not on notice yet. They appear to be playing blithely away the way they've been playing, you know, for decades. So I think this Comey hearing tomorrow is very important, and I really hope that tough questions are asked both by Republicans and Democrats, will tell me.
Well, of course, the Trump-Russia connection is going to dominate, I suspect, a large chunk of the hearing. However, it is amazing to me that it has not yet been broached, the conflict of interest, which is also one of the charges that they're supposed to be investigating, possible conflict of interest, not only by Trump himself, but by his campaign and people connected to it. Conflict of interest. You couldn't get a more glaring conflict of interest than in James Comey. With respect to the Clinton Foundation, which is one thing, but also this email issue when he was fully in charge of it. Could you discuss that as how it is so ironic that this hearing is going ahead, but they're severing all these other things out of it and saying, well, we're not going to pay attention to these things. These are not the focus of our hearing. Well, if it is about conflict of interest, you have a situation here, not just with Comey, but also with Mueller, as it pertains to Hillary Clinton, who at one time was under investigation. Whatever happened to that? Both of them, Comey and Mueller, seem to be determined not to bring that investigation to fruition.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, what's happened since, and we talked about this before, but I'll briefly go into it. I mean, what's happened, particularly since about 1989, 1992, is that, you know, America truly is disproportionately large and influential and consequential, not just geopolitically and not just socially, but economically. And so the people in government who supposedly regulate American businesses and Americans and investment firms, they don't get particularly well paid while they're in government service. Yet they have the ability by their actions or inactions to either cost you a lot of money, cost you billions, or make you tens of billions. And so we have, you know, this system has evolved, this uniparty, where people at both parties go in, take their positions, often not like the front row senator Republican, the senator representative, but more, you know, on the staffs, in the regulatory agencies, and the SEC, the FDA, and elsewhere, and the FBI and Department of Justice. And before long, these big law firms and investment firms and accounting firms and corporations say, you know what? You've been working in government service for a while. We'd really like to hire you. And they can take somebody who's making a lot of money, say $100,000, $150,000, and instantly they're making $3 million a year, or $5 million a year, or whatever, in private service. And so when I see that, going back now to Reagan, when, you know, Reagan left as president, you know, I was quite young, but sharply critical of the notion that a man who had made a fair amount of money as an actor in the private sector before going to public service should allow friends of his to buy him a mansion in Bel Air and the Japanese to pay him a lot of money for speaking fees. I thought that was incredibly unseemly. It's gotten much worse than that since then. I mean, now you have Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, who were whatever they were, $14 million in debt in 2001. Suddenly they're worth $100 to $200 million, never really having worked an honest day in their life. You know, that's such a very bad example, and I don't like to see that in Comey. I mean, here Comey was in, I think he might have been in private practice before he went back in as deputy attorney general, but then he went at Washington, and then on the board of this HSBC, which is, you know, one of the very troubled large multinational banks, which has had a series of problems in Geneva and around the world, but particularly in Geneva, where various and sundry people may have had, Americans included, illegal offshore bank accounts. You know, I really don't like to see that progression, and I wonder why it was that Obama decided to replace Mueller with Comey. I wonder. So, I mean, there's some deep questions here. Since the last time we were together on air, the world has been blowing up. It's gotten even more negative than I conceived last week. We have an array of geopolitical threats. We have an array of people who would like to get inside our government from the outside of this country. I think Russia is one actor for sure that is using the internet and cyber tools to try to gain advantage, not just against government officials, not just in potentially in elections, but more importantly, in the area of business and investing. But come on, so are we. So are the Chinese.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. The United States practically pioneered this practice of trying to pry into other countries' electoral process and wedge their way in. And it's acting like, oh, my God, look what they're trying to do to us. We have to put an end to it somehow. This is such hypocrisy. It's almost laughable.
Or imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, I guess. But I mean, it's just, I think as a base principle, it is wrong for certainly government officials and certainly, you know, unregulated government officials, secretive government officials, to meddle in political elections, political campaigns around the world. But, you know, let's think about what happened just last year. If Barack Obama gets on Air Force One, goes to England in the middle of the Brexit referendum, gives this big speech warning of the dangers of leaving the EU, and then announcing that if they do leave, Britain will go to the back of the line in any trade negotiation. I mean, that's not influencing an election. That's ridiculous. So I think if we go back to the period 2000, the November 2000 election, where Hillary Clinton afterwards was fond of saying that George W. Bush was selected, not elected, we had the endless period of time where people were saying, oh, he's not a legitimate president. And then we think back to late October 2016, when Hillary and others of her surrogates were going around saying, hey, you know, Donald Trump needs to say that he will give up, concede, within 15 minutes of the AP calling the election. Otherwise, he's destroying the democracy. I mean, what are we going to do? We're going to spend the next 4 years, assuming Donald Trump survives as president, and then another four if he's reelected, saying, you know, going back over this ground over and over and over again? I mean, I think Hillary Clinton is redefining, and the Democrats are redefining, the concept of what a sore loser is. I mean, they lost the election. There's no evidence whatsoever yet put forward many months, almost 7 months afterwards, of collusion by any foreign power that may have changed the results of the election. Now, there is, on the other hand, abundant evidence in the public domain that Clinton loyalists may have tipped the balance in the primary season in numerous states away from Bernie Sanders to Hillary Clinton. Now, if we want to get excited about something, that's something I think Democrats really should be up in arms about. And that was dead wrong. You cannot say on the other side of the aisle that Donald Trump, you know, had the Republican primary season sewn up. He got the nomination against long odds. Hillary, on the other hand, had a gigantic stockpile of cash. She cooked the system with the superdelegates. There are many primary results that seem very suspicious to me. I don't think we've had proper investigation yet into the whole Seth Rich situation, what really happened there, you know, and many other deeply troubling aspects of that primary season. And then beyond that, if we, you know, it's fun to look at nuances, but in terms of the big issues, Hillary, I'm a political neophyte, and, you know, drinking 8 beers a day, and I don't like beer particularly, I could have run a better campaign for Hillary Clinton than the one she ran. And it was ridiculous.
Well, I want to ask this because you brought us back to a point where I think this committee ought to focus on. In the end, it is doing this probe literally because Hillary complained so much and she accused repeatedly, she accused Donald Trump of playing ball with the Russians. And I would argue that that is not an insignificant thing. Hillary Clinton was constantly carping about the Russians. She was the first one who said it. Where do you think she might have gotten, let's say that there's an allegation and it is a substantive one, where do you think she might have gotten the information about possible Russia-Trump collusion? As a person who's no longer in office, as a person who allegedly doesn't have Secret Service clearance, as a person who at the time doesn't have any connection supposedly with the intelligence world, where would she have gotten information like that to raise such an issue?
And then have
that followed up with a formal hearing. Doesn't it kind of make it look like, in fact, the charge of collusion also stretches to Hillary Clinton and the intelligence community itself?
Well, I think, Yatrice, to answer the question, you first must remember that Hillary Clinton is indeed the smartest woman in the world. So even though she doesn't have security clearance, she must know everything. I'm being a little bit sarcastic. I think, my friends and those who are expert in analyzing the situation in Russia remind me that Russia is, in the political sense, not dissimilar from the United States. I mean, there are different interests in Russia. And Bill was president of the United States in a period of time when Russia was going through great turmoil, and no doubt has, and is said to have close ties with many of the powerful oligarchs in Russia. We see, just through the admitted speech revenues for Bill Clinton, that he received substantial sums in the terms of speaking fees over the course of his post-presidency. We also know that John Podesta, there's some great reporting by Richard Pollack of the Daily Caller, great reporting on something called Rosnano, R-O-S-N-A-N-O, putting, I think it was, $35 million into a shell company called Juul, J-O-U-L-E, Unlimited, in which John Podesta, and who knows who else in the Clinton orbit, John Podesta was, at the time, I believe, either on his way to advising Hillary Clinton as head of her campaign, or it was immediately prior to that period. But anyway, John was given an interest in this Juul Unlimited before Rosnano put $35 million of hard cash into it and offered up its connections. This Rosnano is I forget if it's a company or it's a part of the Russian government. And the full disclosures concerning Rosnano and its relationship to Juul and its relationship to Podesta were never properly made in any campaign filings. So, I think what the Clintons are up to is their usual tricks. They know their vulnerabilities, and they turn around, they attack the other side with a crime, or a potential crime, that they themselves have committed, to kind of muddy things up so that when the dust settles, they can say, well, you're guilty and we're guilty. Let's just both agree that, we both screwed up and we didn't do it intentionally. Let's just move on. Let's let bygones be bygones. That tends to be their approach here. But, I think it is a fair issue to investigate deeply the degree to which foreign interests have been meddling in American politics. Our country is different, for example, than Australia. And the video I was mentioning, Yatrice, is excellent in contrasting the situation in Australia versus the United States. In our country, foreign money is not allowed to invest in elections and candidates. You're just not allowed to do it. And it's wrong if Republicans do it. It's wrong if Democrats do it. It's wrong if neutral people do it. And the standard way in which the way in which it can happen is that instead of investing in a campaign, which is illegal, what foreign interests can do is invest in foundations that are either controlled or influenced by political candidates or past politicians, like the Clintons, like McCain. And there can be blurry lines, particularly if the foundation and the campaign's accounting are not strictly done, if the overlaps and shared expenses are not sussed out. So there are ways around it. And that's a whole area that really deserves close scrutiny, both the Republican candidates and the Democratic candidates. And I would argue, in particular, into the question of the Clintons. Now, this will perhaps disappoint some of the Trump wing, but there was fresh reporting over 24 hours into revelations concerning the Donald Trump and Eric Trump foundations, where you know, it seems at surface level, if a Forbes article is right, it sure seems as if, you know, the accounting was sloppy there, and there may have been some cross-subsidization. That's wrong. Whether Republicans do it, Democrats do it, the sitting president does it, it's just wrong. Charities need to be run properly, and campaigns need to be run properly, and foreigners need to stay out of our election, and we, frankly, should stay out of foreign people's election. So all that, you know, is grounds for valid inquiry. It may be that you can't do it and just, you know, however much time is allocated to Comey tomorrow, but the American people deserve to know, A, that our elections are run honestly, and B, that we're not wasting hard-earned money in trying to influence foreign elections, which to me seems a lost cause anyway.
Do you think it is possible that somebody on that intelligence panel would raise the question of why didn't James Comey follow through and fully conclude an investigation into the missing emails and into other issues related to the Clinton Foundation? He just left these things alone. And also gave free passes to Clinton associates.
Well, I sure would hope so. I mean, I understand just through reporting that Donald Trump's out in Ohio at the moment, and I think he's hosting a bunch of Republican senators in the White House tonight. And I would hope that some and the staffers are asking these questions. I mean, James Comey's performance, really going back 2001 to 2005 period, not being able to look through the publicly available evidence, forgetting that, you know, the confidential information, which would steal an indictment and conviction, in my view, his inability to win a conviction back then against the Clinton Foundation when it was transparently obvious that it was a fraud, beggars belief. But, you know, he was head of the FBI as the Clinton Foundation was, in my view, illegally reorganized from January 20th, 2009 forward, after Barack Obama was, you know, won office and was in his first term. How come he didn't notice all these shenanigans back then? How come the Department of Justice didn't notice it? So, I mean, it seems to me that James Comey, either directly or indirectly, and people in both parties have been involved in a cover-up of long-standing, covering up the fact the Clinton Foundation is nothing more than an illegal slush fund for the Clinton family, for people who want to purchase influence with the Clintons when they get into office, that its accounting has never been done properly, and that there are lots of questions to me about public corruption, about whether money may have been paid into the Clinton Foundation by way of donations, no questions asked, return for favors. And it strikes me that, you know, I believe wholeheartedly in the men and women, the line people in the Department of Justice, in the FBI. I think that if they had been granted the subpoena power that instead they were asked for, that was asked for prior to Comey made his decision last year, I think we would have gotten a very different set of results. I mean, James Comey, as FBI director, is not in charge of deciding who gets prosecuted, who doesn't get prosecuted. He doesn't get to rewrite the law and say that, you know, because Hillary Clinton didn't demonstrate intent when it came, you know, to operate the private server the way she operated the private server and to have classified information disappear from control in government hands, that she would never be prosecuted. I mean, he invented the requirements in that speech when he let her off the hook first time to show intent. There's no requirement. Many people
don't. There's no requirement for intent.
Right. And just for that, I mean, how did he come to that conclusion? You know, how did he leave? And we talk about these private meetings that Donald Trump may have had with Comey. What about the private meeting on the tarmac with Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton? What about Hillary Clinton's statement after that fact in the middle of a campaign that she looked very favorably, A, on the idea of Loretta staying in her role as Attorney General, and B, on the possibility that Barack Obama might be a Supreme Court justice? I mean, why isn't that something that needs to be investigated as well? So, you know, I think the American people who roll up our sleeves, whatever our political backgrounds may be, and go to work and struggle to take home after tax enough money to pay our expenses and maybe save for retirement. We, the people, deserve answers to these tough questions, and enough of the platitudes, enough of the excuses. You know, why, with all the resources of the federal government, couldn't Comey put the Clintons away in 2001 to 2005? Why could and why didn't and why couldn't he do it? And with that background, you know, why was it fair, or how much of that experience was shared with whatever team may be investigating the Clinton Foundation now and before, when Comey was at the FBI? Now, these are the kind of tough questions that the public deserves to get. I mean, it's not like we're spending $1 billion a year on our government. We're spending close to, I think it is, $4 trillion a year on government. We deserve better than a dirty T-shirt.
Comey himself raises some pretty interesting questions, and I don't know how people could say he was properly vetted. Prior to coming to the FBI, it was reported that he had a net worth of about $124,000. After being with the FBI, his most recent net worth that was reported was something like $34 million. Does that raise any hackles for you?
Well, it's not as bad as the former mayor of Mexico City, who was paid $100 a year and was worth several billion. But I actually think, Utrecht, to be fair to him, I think the chain was something like this, that he was U.S. He was in private practice in the 90s, I think. I may have that wrong. But he went from there into being a U.S. attorney, and then he was deputy attorney general. And then in around 2005 or so, he went to Lockheed, where he made a fair amount of money. He was paid multiple millions per year. And in addition, he was on the board of HSBC. So he had an interim period of, let's call it 8 years, where he was paid multiple millions per year. So it's not inconceivable that he would have that amount of money. If he had been only in private, I mean, if it were like the Clintons, then it would be ridiculous. I mean, but Comey did actually hold a real job. I mean, he was general counsel of a gigantic defense contractor and was paid a lot of money in that role. And that's a complex role. That's not just a show-up work job. I mean, you've got contracts, bidding procedures, lawsuits, your global company, Foreign Corrupt Practices Act issues. It's a large publicly traded company. He was probably paid in that role according to scale. On the other hand, you know, you take the Clintons, why, or Obama, why is it fair to give Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton a $12 to $15 million book advance when distinguished authors who, oh, just so you know, I'm looking 30 feet from me, I can now see Paul Volcker walking down the street. I'm that close to the swamp. The former head of the Federal Reserve. You know, you know, there's a difference between what Comey was doing in the private sector, where I would argue he probably was fairly paid, and what some politicians get by way of sinecure, these expensive speech payments, book advances, sweetheart investment opportunities. I don't see we see a lot of signs of that in Comey.
So in the end, there are many commonalities between what James Comey is supposed to be testifying about and what Donald Trump is being accused of. That's the irony. And with respect to Comey's client, especially at one point, you could call her that, the Clintons being protected politically by Comey, I think that's a very serious breach and dereliction of duty, tantamount almost to really breaking not just the law, but his oath as the head of the FBI. I think it's clear that this, and this is why I believe that we can't sever the foreign influence at this point, nor can we just dismiss this as, well, we're doing the right thing trying to find out. You called it the uniparty. I think that's it. But I also think there's something here, and that is we are witnessing possibly the takedown of Donald Trump through this mechanism, where both parties are working together to get him out. Not that he doesn't deserve it. I mean, he brought a large part of this upon himself, with the thought that he knows everything and he can manage everything. But in fact, he did not know what he was doing and still doesn't know what he's doing in the realm, in the political realm. He might have a good handle on the hotel business and other aspects of business, but politics is not something he knows. And many things he did were contrary, if not illegal, contrary to established rule. So he brought a lot of this on himself. But in the end, I think this is a combination of interests to take him out. We have the so-called deep state who are working against Trump. Trump, from the very beginning, had indicated he did not trust the FBI or the CIA or any of the intelligence services. He bashed them repeatedly. You have that sector. You have the Republicans who really resent him being president. You certainly have the Democrats. And you have other elements that we still don't know yet who they are, but working together through this mechanism of the congressional inquiry, the intelligence committee looking at things, that might be in fact the best coup that we've ever witnessed in recent years.
Well, I'm going to make a prediction here. I'm going to make a prediction that tomorrow, in the evening news tomorrow, the smallest story will be, you know, whatever conclusions may be reached concerning the degree to which there may have been Russian meddling in the 2015-16 cycle. I think there are a lot of bigger stories. There may even be bigger stories that come out of the testimony. I'm told that there's a guy, I want to say his last name is Montgomery. I forget what his first name is, Dennis, I think, who may be testifying tomorrow. And he will be, if he does testify, I'm told he will be revealing bombshell information about revelations that were made to the FBI that were spiked, concerning the degree to which there may have been other types of meddling in the election. So I think just on the hearings tomorrow, I think the Russian issue will be small. We have the UK election tomorrow. Let's hope that's safe. We have the drama playing out in Qatar and the Middle East. There's a lot going on. Let's hope we all could stay safe in the meanwhile. But I actually think for all the hype, what will end up coming out tomorrow is not what Hillary had expected. So she will, I think, be disappointed yet again, is my guess.
Well, we leave it there. Thanks so much, Charles, for being with us today. Let's see how it turns out tomorrow and whether the questions you raised today and I raised today, whether, in fact, they will be addressed and answered, whether we would find anything particularly revelatory tomorrow from the testimony of James Comey. Thanks so much. And that brings us to the end of our program today. Stay tuned. Coming up, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories, LEID stories at gmail.com. I want to say so much that it is important for us to show up tomorrow at Medgar Evers College and join the community in sending a signal that we're on to Hillary Clinton, no matter how many black folks she surrounds herself with. We see her. We spot her. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.